Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. And you know why we're here? To help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad to have you listening today. Happy Tuesday. I hope your week is off to a great start. All right, so here's a question for you. Ready? Is your spouse, if you're married, is your spouse your best friend? In what ways do you prioritize the friendship part of your marriage? I'm going to ask that again. In what ways do you prioritize the friendship part of your marriage? And maybe that's a trick question for you because you suddenly realize, well, we haven't really prioritized the friendship part. And why does that matter? Well, we're talking about just that, friendship and marriage. It's one thing to love your spouse. It's a whole nother thing to like them, to enjoy them, to really cultivate memories together because you enjoy being together. Well, our marriage and family experts join us again. They join us every month, Bill and Pam Farrell. We're going to talk about just that, cultivating friendship in marriage and why it matters. Then in the second hour, we're going to look at how to deal with anger, how to diffuse anger. We'll hear from both Dr. Greg Smalley and Dr. Gary Chapman as they unpack the ripple effect of anger, especially when we let our emotions overtake our intellectual response, our heart response, and we start to act and react in ways that are totally beneath us, not at all like us. And there is a way to overcome that when you're so angry or so emotional that you say and do things you later regret. There's a way to minimize those reactions. We're going to talk about that second hour. So you're up for a real treat. Both hours, very important topics. And so let me not waste another minute. Let me tell you about my guests, and we'll get them on the show. Bill and Pam Farrell are authors, speakers, and co-founders and co-directors of LoveWise, an organization to help people connect love and wisdom and bring practical insights to their personal relationships. Bill and Pam have written more than 30 books, including the very famous Men Are Like Waffles and Women Are Like Spaghetti, as well as Red Hot Monogamy. They've been married more than 30 years, have raised three young men who love Jesus and athletics. You can find their influencer page at our website at myfaithradio.com. Bill and Pam, welcome back to the program.
Hi.
Good. Hey, Susie.
Good to be with you both. Well, you know the drill, so let's jump right in. We're going to start by talking scripture. And Pam, I'm wondering about you. Is there a verse that you can share with us that you've been thinking about these days?
Yeah, I'm going to paraphrase a part of Proverbs 5:18-19. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. And then ellipsis to the end, may you be ever intoxicated with her love. So I love that verse because it shows the happy side of marriage, that we're supposed to rejoice in our spouse like a celebration, like a party. And that's kind of what best friends do.
Wow. Awesome. Bill, what about you?
So the verse that jumped out at me this morning was James chapter 2, verse 23. And it says, and Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. And I got to thinking about that Abraham and God, they went on this journey together. They believed together for something that was impossible. When Abraham was told he was going to have a son, both he and Sarah were too old. And yet they went on that journey together. And then he was asked to sacrifice his son so that he would know what it was going to be like for God to sacrifice his son later on. And they went through that very intense experience together. And then they just shared a lot of the journey of life. And Abraham became a friend of God. And I got to thinking that as family members, and specifically as husband and wife, we can become friends with each other in the same way. When we believe God for big things together, and when we go on the journey together and we let the intense situations of life draw us together rather than pull us apart, we can, over the years, become stronger and stronger friends.
Wow, great, great word. Well, this question is for you, Bill. When you think about this, when most people meet their future mate, is their attraction mostly physical and the chemistry that they feel, or is it normal for most couples to enjoy sort of a friendship while they're dating?
Well, I would say for most people are looking for the magic. Like, most people don't look across the aisle and say, "Wow!" Like, speaking for the men, like that girl is a really good friend of mine. When we get together, we have a great time, and based on the fact that we're friends, I think we could be really good married partners. So I think I might start dating that person. Now, what we do is we go, "Wow, look at that woman! She has the body type that I like. She has a personality that I like, and they captivate us emotionally. That's usually where the relationship starts." And most people, they just get caught up in the passion and the emotion of it and hope that it's going to work and that it's going to be magical just like they see on TV. And it doesn't usually occur to them until a few years into marriage that what we really need to develop here is a friendship.
Wow.
And it would be better if they asked the questions ahead of time, but most people don't.
Yeah.
Most people ask them later.
And what about you, Pam? I mean, I missed the joke. I must have been sleeping. I'm so sorry. So you were joking, Bill, when you said that guys, when they look at women, they're thinking she'd be a good friend. Maybe she'd be a good mate. I must have missed that. I'm so sorry. Were you joking? Wake up, Susie. This is live radio. I'm so sorry. But so
yeah, hormones usually lead guys.
Okay, okie dokie. But for the women, is she looking for a friendship there?
I actually think that we do really want a confidant, somebody we can really trust with our emotions, someone who knows us and still believes in us, even in our imperfections. So we value the friendship. Usually that's what draws us into a romantic relationship. We like to tell newlyweds in our book, The First 5 Years of Marriage, and that if you give him your wife, this is in the context of marriage, if you give a man, your husband, your body, he'll give you his heart. And guys, if you
give a woman your heart, she will give you her body.
Hmm. And so we both of those components are there. You know, the physical, the wow factor is there, but the friendship factor is also there. But sometimes we just have it in different orders first or different priorities as men and women. But both men and women are looking for both. They just might come at it from different sides of the mountain.
Mm, excellent.
Susie, I do think it's a harder issue for men,
mm-hmm.
because when we think about what we do with our friends, Like I think about the friends I've had in my life. I played sports with them. I went fishing with them. I built projects with them. We did a lot of competitive kind of intense things together. And to picture that same thing with my wife is a little difficult to picture. And I didn't spend a lot of time growing up sitting around talking to my guy friends or even playing games that imitated life. Like we imitated fake life. So we were superheroes, and we imagined that we were like people on TV, and the thought of picturing that kind of friendship with my wife, it just didn't kind of fit the picture at all. I saw it as a completely different thing that I was going to have with my wife, but I didn't know what the different thing was.
Something I suppose
so for most guys, I think it's a learning process after we get married.
Mm, interesting. So, Bill, would you say, though, on both sides of this equation, that's very clear the way you've made it for both men and women want a friendship, but maybe they prioritize something ahead of it. You know, their priorities are slightly different, but as they pursue each other, this becomes this mutual desire. Would you say, though, that friendship is probably the first thing to go when you start to get on autopilot in marriage? Do you know what I'm saying?
You're asking that to me, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very fragile part of marriage that I don't think we know how to build a friendship. Like, again, speaking as a guy, in order for me to build a friendship with Pam, I have to stay forever curious about her because she approaches life so different than I do that if I ever lose the fascination that I have with her, it turns into criticism. And so that's my choice. I'm either going to be curious about her and I'm going to keep asking questions and I'm going to keep having this sense of, wow, I would have never looked at it that way. Or I'm going to be critical of her and say, that's not even the right way to think. It's not the right way to approach life, and you're just off track.
And that is how so many...
fragile.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I was going to... Sorry, Bill. I was going to say, that's what I hear from a lot of women, that their husbands get so impatient and exasperated just because they don't think like their husbands. But what does that do to the spirit of a woman, even a safety in friendship, if that shortcut is taken over and over again? You don't think like I do. You don't even make any sense. Like, I want you to be like me, but not really, you know?
Well, it creates a scenario where everybody's walking on eggshells. And now rather than investing in the relationship, we're trying to manage the relationship so we're not mad at each other. And nobody got married so they could manage a relationship. We all got married because we wanted to go on a journey in life with somebody. And so it can be a challenge for guys to learn. But when men decide that they're going to be curious about their wives, it continually grows. Like, I'm still amazed after 35 years of marriage that I'm learning things about Pam. And in those really aggressive times of life when I just want to get things done, I want to be efficient, it's not always easy to be curious. But I always regret it when I don't, because when I am curious about Pam, I see life from a whole different perspective that I could never get to on my own.
Excellent. So, Pam, when you think back to those early years of marriage, give us a synopsis of a season when you realized you'd started to maybe administrate your marriage. You guys each kind of slid into the roles that you needed to tend to, where you let go of the idea of friendship and then you realized it. Tell us about that time.
I think the very first time that we saw how easily friendship could drift away was Bill went back to school to finish his education, and he was taking like 25 units. I mean, it was just like total overload, and I was working more than full time. So I was working like 40 something hours, and we were doing ministry. We hadn't had kids yet, but we definitely were on two separate tracks. And because I was earning the bulk of the income at that time, and he had scholarship money that came in, but I got a little attitude towards, like, all right, I'm earning the money. I can be bossy and I can call the shots. And I got a lot of bit of an attitude going. Mm-hmm. And we were definitely on two separate, like, tracks, two parallel tracks. And I thought, wow, I am hurting his feelings a lot these days because of my bossiness, because of the stress I was under. I don't feel like he's appreciating me enough. And he was feeling the same way. I mean, doesn't she see that I'm doing, you know, two semesters work in one semester, and she's not valuing how hard I'm working on school so we can get on to seminary. I mean, we had all these great lofty spiritual goals, and yet we were in a fight. And we saw how easy it was to just drift apart. Even if you have like goals and like mindedness, if you quit having fun. And so we had to work really hard to maintain those date nights once a week and do something fun and different and not talk about work, not talk about our responsibilities, but talk about each other and what's going on in each other's hearts and lives and minds, and talk about God and what God's teaching us in our quiet time. We had to cultivate that friendship.
So, Bill, would you say that just having kind of coming together and both of you identifying, okay, we've been running parallel paths, we need a reset, we need to turn towards each other, did you feel immediate relief? I know it takes a while to walk that out, but just the very fact that you identified you were on separate tracks and you guys needed something different from each other, did that kind of bear immediate fruit for you?
Well, absolutely, because the things that cause us to drift apart are the same things that draw us together. I'll give you an example. One thing that I love about Pam is that she's an oldest sister in her family who's opinionated. I'm the youngest in my family. I had an oldest sister who was confident and opinionated. So I'm very comfortable around somebody like Pam. And when I'm in sync with Pam, that confidence and that willingness to take risks is extremely attractive. But when that same trait turns into giving me instructions, I resent it. And so when we identified it, it was like we turned it around, and now rather than the headlight pointing in our eyes, the headlight just turned out in front of us and gave us direction.
Wow.
And that's the beauty of marriage, is because it's an issue of the heart, it can turn quickly. I mean, unfortunately, it can turn negative quickly, but it can also turn positive quickly.
You know,
it's the same traits that are irritating you that you love about each other.
Isn't that something? So it's the same people having a conversation and facing the same way, and it makes all the difference. So often marriages fail, they fall apart when they could be solved by a good fight, a good communication, redirecting and resetting on the path that you're on. Talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today, love to hear from you. How do you cultivate friendship in your marriage? Why don't you chime in? We've got some resources off our Faith Radio shelf. We'd love to get into your hands. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Or Susie at myfaithradio.com. That's email, Susie at myfaithradio.com. More about friendship and marriage in just a moment. Really glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to our friends Bill and Pam Farrell. They're marriage and family experts. Today we're zeroing in on the purpose and the promise of friendship and marriage. That's a benefit of walking with each other, walking with God, but it's something we so often let go. As my friend Dr. Greg Smalley always says, love is not self-sustaining. We need to nurture it. We need to take care of it. We need to make investments and deposits. We're drawing from a couple of the Farrell's books. They've written close to a gazillion books, but here's the title of a couple of them that we're drawing from today. 52 Ways to Wow Your Husband, How to Put a Smile on His Face. That's by Pam. And the first 5 years, make the love investment that lasts a lifetime. So, Pam, this is, other than the obvious, how is friendship in marriage differ from friendships outside of marriage? I mean, I know we get to snuggle at night with our husband, but I mean, truly, does that friendship look different than from a friendship point of view?
Well, it should look different than your other friendships. It should be deeper. It should be richer. It should be more trustworthy. It should be, other than your relationship with Jesus, it should be your priority relationship. In fact, that's one of the ways to know if you are going outside the boundaries of what God intended, is if you talk to somebody else more, or if you talk to somebody else deeper, or if you give more of your heart away to another man, you're in the danger zone. Those kind of thoughts and feelings should be pointed towards your husband. And one of the things that I talk about in 52 Ways to Wow Your Husband is, you know, keep him as a priority. 52 ways, that means doing a wow date once a week for a year. That means it's a priority relationship. I don't do a wow date for everybody else in my life. Only my husband would I spend that much time and effort to protect, maintain, and nurture that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Bill, did you want to go ahead?
And I would just add in, Susie, that your spouse is it's really the one person on earth you have the opportunity to treat just like yourself. Because we all have done an evaluation of ourselves, and we realize that there are some pretty incredible parts about who we are. Like, there's some areas of life we handle really well. We're very proficient, and it's pretty amazing to watch us in those areas of life. We have other areas of life where we don't perform well at all. That it's an immature area of our life, and we wish we were better at it, but we're not. And then there's some parts of our life that are just silly, and we know how to live with those in ourselves. And your spouse, you have the opportunity to do that same thing. You can admire the areas of life they're really good at. You can support them in the areas that don't work so well, and you can continue to giggle at the silly side of life together.
That's really good.
If you do that, the friendship grows. If you don't, then you have lots of ammunition to hurt one another.
Yeah. Well, give me some examples from your own lives of silly things, if you don't mind, that you kind of hold loosely and giggle at.
Well, one of the things, we hide squirt guns in different parts of our house and just like, you know, ninja jump out. We'll have squirt gun fights in the house. It's like, it's okay. Our kids love this because they're like, awesome, we can have squirt gun fights in the house too. And you know what? We had to be okay with that because we enjoyed it. Just we walk into each other's offices and tell each other jokes. Even when Bill was a senior pastor and our offices were in different locations, I would email him jokes or would put funny cards in his briefcase because life just gets heavy.
Right. And like on a more serious note but still silly is I tend to be pretty handy, so I do a lot of my own projects. And when I'm done with a project, I want Pam to come just admire it.
And so I make it like a really big deal. I have this stash of confetti now. I'm like, woohoo, let's throw confetti. It's awesome, honey.
And most of the time it doesn't warrant all that. Like, I hung a closet door. Bam, bam, come look what I did. And like, she wants to roll her eyes and go, yeah.
I mean, that would be like, yeah, well, that's your job. But instead of like, yeah, that's your job, I mean, celebrate those little moments and the big moments and every moment in between. I mean, you don't have your spouse for that long. It is just a treasure to be best friends with your spouse.
I thought it was so. Go ahead, Bill.
We also quote Rocky a lot in our relationship.
Perfect. I like it. I like it. You know, I noticed, I think it was the WOW book, Pam, where you mentioned that the average age widow for women is like 57 years old, something like that.
Right. And people don't realize how short of amount of time they actually have with their spouse. And when The median age for all women in the United States is 36. The median age for widows is 57. That means a typical woman in the United States will have just over 1,000 Saturdays with her husband. I mean, 1,000. If you think about how many are already gone and how many more do you have, that was a real wake-up call for me when I actually did the logistics of counting down now that I'm in, you know, we're double nickels, 55, 50, now 56, but when I wrote the book, 55, how few weekends I had left with my husband. And maybe I might want to relook at my priorities and my free time and carve out a little bit more to celebrate and have fun and a little bit of red hot monogamy with my spouse, too.
Wow. And you want to add to that, Bill? That's just startling when you think about it. I mean, I've read this in your books and I've read this in other articles, especially like families from 9/11, where they talked about that the very things that bothered them about their spouse are the things that they miss most of all now that they're not there. They so wish they could see their dirty socks sitting next to their favorite recliner, you know? And I mean, speak to that, just because, again, we take life so for granted until we don't have those very things dear to our hearts, you know?
Well, we do, and it's all for good reasons, because life is busy and life is full, and so people look for things to take for granted because it kind of eases the burden on them. But I would also say the one thing we don't want to take for granted is our family relationships, because when you're young, you think you have forever, but in reality, this life is short. And that's one of the reasons why Pam and I have always stayed very deliberate. Like, there are some things that we plan out and we schedule that most people think should be spontaneous. So every time we pray over a meal, we kiss each other. We sit down with our calendars and say, when are we going to date one another? And what are the days we're going to set aside where we get to go play together all day long? And how are we going to make sure that we see our kids now that they're grown adults? And how are we going to slot it into our schedule? And we have been very proactive about those kinds of things because we know that they disappear quickly, and that none of us is guaranteed beyond today. And you can either sit around and be emotional about it, or you can deliberately plan it into your life that you're not going to give into the tendency of taking each other for granted. You're just going to keep routines going that keep you connected.
Good word. Talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today about cultivating friendship. And in light of that just recent thought that we just really don't know how many days that we have, let's cherish the little things. Let's laugh at ourselves. As Bill said, we have strengths, we have weaknesses, we have silly areas, and we're just a pile of contradictions. But isn't it life better when we're doing it together? If you've got questions you want to chime in, here's the number, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. More on friendship and marriage in a moment. Press on when I still don't get it. You know what? We stick with this marriage thing. We keep loving each other. We walk closely with God. We die to ourselves so often. We think of ourselves first. But it's possible to thrive in marriage. It's possible to look at your spouse and say, you're my absolute best friend. I can say that about my hubby, Kev. I know Bill Farrell can say that about his wife, Pam Farrell. We've got them on today talking about the importance of cultivating friendship in marriage. And that takes effort like anything else worth having. And I'm wondering, Bill, if you would talk to the couple listening who share really a deep faith, but maybe don't have a lot in common in the way of hobbies, interests. What are some steps they can take to build just a genuine friendship with each other as well?
My first comment to that couple is welcome to the club. That's actually a very normal experience because we all tend to marry what we don't have. And it ends up being really good for our family. Like, the fact that we have different interests and we have different strengths is really valuable for our kids because they get a much broader approach to life than they would if we were both the same. And so first I would say, kind of take the pressure off by saying it's normal for you to do that. And a couple of things you can do to help bridge the gap is first of all, just get adventurous and try some new things. Like, ask yourself, what are our other friends doing that we don't do that we might just give a try and see if we both end up liking it? And I would tell you, for Pam and I, like, I assumed when we got married that because we were both athletic in our approach to life, I assumed we were going to have a lot in common. But it turns out that Pam and I do sports very, very differently. So I like doing sports with my feet on the ground. She prefers sports that involve either dancing or swimming.
Lots of water. Anything on the water, I'm there.
And I'm not big on swimming. And so rather than get into a power play, we started looking for what could we do together that maybe you're not excellent at and I'm not excellent at, but we could do together. And we eventually discovered that we both like to ride bikes and we both are pretty good at kayaking because we're on the water, so Pam loves it, but we're not in the water, so I love it. And so, like, keep looking and just ask yourself, what are some of our other friends doing? Can we go join them and just see if we both like it? And then the other thing I would say is it's always okay to take turns. So it's okay for you to say, hey, this time let's go do what you like. Next time let's go do what I like. And you just endure it for the sake of the friendship. And it's amazing what happens when you make that kind of commitment to one another. God tends to rush in and give you a sense of enjoyment, even though it's not what you would do on your own. There's a sense of enjoyment that deepens the friendship.
Pam, can you think of anything you guys have taken that approach with that has surprised you that you've actually ended up liking?
I wouldn't have thought that I would have loved snowmobiling like as much as I did. We were speaking up in Winnipeg, and it happened to be Bill's birthday weekend, and I just have to mention to the meeting planners, so y'all have a lot of snow up here. Do you have, like, any snow machines with a couple like to double date with us? It's Bill's birthday. And, I mean, there was this awesome young couple that said, yeah, we have four of them. We have all the gear. We'll take you out. And so I knew Bill would love it because he loves, you know, the power. The power. But I was surprised that it was me who went over 100 miles an hour. I was like, woo, this is fun. So that surprised me. So taking that risk and doing things that might be out of your comfort zone, you might discover something you both love doing together. If we lived in the snow, we would own those snowmobiles for sure.
Wow, excellent. Okay, Pam, let's get practical. Talk to the woman listening today who wants to reach her husband and engage in his world. And just as Bill, you were saying, you got to ask questions, you got to stay curious, and you got to not expect your wife to think like a man. We've got to expect our husbands not to be our girlfriends either. So what advice do you have to approach the man as he is the man, but engage in his world?
Right. One of the wow dates in 52 Ways to Wow Your Husband is to look at his recharger box. And so what would your husband do if he had a day off? In Men Are Like Waffles and Like Spaghetti, we talk about that men have this blank box that they like to go to recharge, to rest and recharge. And every guy has that place that they like to go to. And so if he had 30 minutes of dead time, what would he do? If you were given a day off, where would he want to go? Where does he go when he's stressed to recharge? When he's watching TV and when he's relaxing, what's he watching? Could you go do one of those things with him? And just by asking those questions, what recharges my husband, then you can plan like a really cool wow date that the two of you may enjoy.
Excellent. Okay, here's a little bit of a turn in the discussion. Bill, we'll start with you, but I'd love for both of you to answer. What are some things that ensure a breakdown of the friendship in marriage? You know, what are some things you say definitely not to do? Don't do these things. Give us a few that just off the top of your head.
Well, the first thing I would say is criticism. That it is so easy to be critical of one another. And because you live close to each other, you can always find things to be critical of. And when a man is critical of his wife, she begins to reach a conclusion about herself that I'm not valuable, I'm not beautiful, I'm not capable. And I don't know of a man in the world who wants to be married to a woman who thinks she's not capable, she's not talented, and she's not beautiful. I mean, he married her for those reasons. And yet when a man becomes critical of his wife, he destroys the very things in her that he longs to have from her. So that's the first thing I would say is don't be overly critical. There are times to, of course, confront areas that need to be worked on in the marriage. But so many marriages, they just turn critical, not only in private, but also in public. And you start to get this thought of, well, these people don't even like each other anymore.
And that really is one of the most damaging things that you can do to destroy a friendship is to not watch your words. In Red Hot Romance Tips for Women, I share the softer response to your husband, a way to touch his heart. And it's just an acrostic. S is stop what you're doing and turn towards your mate. O is open up your body language. F is find key words and phrases to repeat. T, try not to take comments he says personally, but listen, express affirming emotions, and then respond with a loving action or a loving touch. If we're just a little bit softer, that will draw our husband out, and he will trust us. One thing that I was really surprised when I was doing the research for Red Hot Romance Tips for Wives is that men long for their wife to be their safe place, their shelter in the storm, that true best friend that knows them, that they can share on a gut level with, and she will extend love and encouragement and affirmation. And really, one of the reasons that I run the Red Hot Romance Wife Challenge twice a year at least is it's good for me. It keeps me being softer. Like there's another Red Hot Romance Wife Challenge coming up in October, and Bill loves it when I run the challenges because I'm extra. It just keeps me extra sensitive and extra kind, and you don't even realize when the edge creeps up on you and you get a little bit of an attitude. But if you make it your daily prayer, Lord, let me be more like you today, let me love like you, it's amazing the difference in the way a wife will approach her husband.
So criticism definitely is one thing that diminishes friendship and marriage. Bill, I'm wondering, do you think guys and gals criticize each other for different reasons? I'm thinking when we get critical as women, it's because it's coming out of a place of hurt, of unkept promises, maybe unfinished tasks that you said you'd finish, or whatever it is, where there's a hurt and it comes out sideways. Is it impatience with guys, or is it coming from a different place? What is it?
Guys do it to protect themselves. The longing in a guy's heart is that he will be successful with his wife. And when he starts to feel like he can't be successful with her, he gets critical of her. If, on the other hand, she is encouraging to him, and when he tries things, she gives her credit for it, or if she's satisfied with what he has done, because the feeling a lot of guys get is, I've been working like crazy, and it's never enough. There's always more, there's always more, there's always more, and so there starts to be this tone of, I can't succeed no matter what I do, and as soon as a guy gets there, he becomes critical. And the other part of that plays into is that men are afraid they're going to fail in conversation because you ladies are typically so much better at interaction than us guys are that we get lost in conversation, and so a lot of guys just say, would you get to the point? Because we don't know where the conversation's going, so we just want it to like quickly get over. And it's the same thing as guys are feeling like they're not succeeding, and so rather than admit that, they become critical of their wives.
Pam, would you say from a woman's perspective, by the way, that's so insightful, Bill. I really appreciate that. It really helps us understand. For women, is it coming from a place of hurt first, like you didn't do this, and so now I'm criticizing you, kind of a sideways expression of sort of an unmet need?
It can come from a variety of places. It can be a place in your heart that's never been healed, so a broken place. For example, I'm a firstborn daughter, alcoholic dad. So that means that I have some self-protection things going on. And I was writing recently for my 7 Simple Skills for Every Woman book, and I was trying to be really introspective, like, where does this ugliness come from? And I thought, wow, a lot of self-protection happened coming from my dysfunctional background that God has really had to unwind and replace. I grew up in a house that's out of control. So somebody has to take control. Okay, that'll be me, firstborn Pam. So that means I can easily turn into a control freak. And if I'm a control freak, that means I can just lob out bunches of directions, more like a commander rather than a wife. And so that means criticism will be a part of that. I am afraid of failure. So if somebody does something and it makes me feel like I'm going to fail, I'll be critical of you if I'm self-protecting. If I let God be my identity and my shield and my defense, then I'm not going to go to that default criticism place if it looks like my plans are not coming together. So I honestly think a really good self-evaluation from a wife looking at, you know, my family of origin, what are my weaknesses that I want to hold up to Jesus and say, God, I'm giving you these weaknesses. Please turn them. I'm going to borrow your strengths to help me become the kind of woman that my husband deserves me to be, because we default to criticism based upon a lot of broken places in our life.
Okay, we default to criticism based on broken places in our life. Just look at that, because that's one roadblock, one barrier, obstacle to friendship. And so when you notice yourself getting critical of your spouse, just back up and tend to the thing that's going on in your heart and get it right with God, and even get it right with your spouse, because it creates an unsafe atmosphere. And Bill, I'm wondering about another one. Would that be neglect? I'm thinking about, and this is a general statement, but I'm just going to say it anyway, but maybe the scenario where you see the man defaulting to his work because that's where he feels successful, the woman who's got children and at home maybe defaulting to kids because that's where she feels emotionally connected, where because she feels disconnected with her hubby. Would that be another barrier to friendship and intimacy in marriage because of we're kind of defaulting where we feel safe, Bill?
Absolutely, and I would say that the way life is run in our world, it is kind of designed to cause neglect in the relationship between a husband and a wife. There are so many responsibilities and so many opportunities and so many different areas pulling for our attention that unless a couple says we're going to make our relationship a priority, we're going to schedule in play time for one another, we're going to schedule in sensitive time for one another, life will eat those up. And you can just fill in the blanks. It might be hobbies, it might be work, it might be kids, it might be church commitments, it might be community involvement, it might be other friends. There's lots of things that will steal that time from you if you don't slot them in.
Pam, did you want to add? Go ahead. Sorry, Bill.
Well, too many of us think it's going to all work out by spontaneous combustion, that if we're just around each other, it's all going to work out. In reality, we have to deliberately slot in our friendship as a husband and wife, or life will steal it from us.
Boy, it's just a constant reminder of the intentionality it takes to really move towards God, to move towards each other, because we can default. As Pam was saying, we all do this self-preservation. When we come back, we're going to talk about some just basic steps you can take today to start cultivating a friendship with your spouse. And guess what? Your friendship with your spouse will look different than my friendship with my spouse and Bill and Pam's, because we're all wired differently. But there are some same things we can do to cultivate intimacy. More with the Farrells in a moment.
We are the sons, we are the daughters of God. No matter where we go, we're close to the Father's heart. And though we stumble, He will not let us fall. We are the Lord's, and we will never forsake. We are the daughters of God.
I love that song. You know, it's such a great reminder that you belong to Jesus first and foremost. Everything you need is found in Him. So even if you're in a marriage where it just doesn't feel like the feeling is mutual, that you both want a best friendship, everything you need is found in Christ. And as you turn towards Him, you remind yourself who you are to Him, in Him. I think it better equips you to stand in marriage and to be at least one person who's investing in marriage. Talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today about the great importance of cultivating friendship in marriage. And for this last segment, if you two don't mind, just giving some tangible steps to that person listening today who's maybe been on autopilot, kind of cruise control, just reacting to life. And your words about that the average widow age is 57 years old, and thinking, my goodness, I've been cruising along like I have all the tomorrows in the world. I don't. And how do I pause and put my priorities back in order? Pam, let's start with you. Just some basic steps to that person who's been kind of on cruise control and wants to start, you know, making deposits in the marriage.
Well, one of the things to do is to really get an accountability partner. Somebody, even another wife who wants to improve her marriage. When I was writing Red Hot Romance Tips for Women, one of my friends emailed me that she had been spending time with a friend and she had given her a copy of Red Hot Monogamy. And that same friend was in leadership, and she knew another friend who was struggling with her marriage so much so that she was ready to just toss in the towel. And so she gave her a copy of Red Hot Monogamy. And I got back an email how one book had traveled through three friends and had basically saved, encouraged, and equipped three marriages and brought one back from the brink of divorce. And that's truly the iron sharpening iron, used in a positive way. So oftentimes when our marriage gets on the rocks, we start complaining to our friends, and they're like, yeah, he's just like no good. And, you know, it erodes our relationship. But hanging out with good friends who believe in marriage and believe in you and your marriage relationship, they'll remind you, he's a good man. Here's his good traits. Let's focus on that. Here, let's prayer walk. Let's do the Red Hot Wife Challenge together. In fact, let's get all of our Bible study to do it together. And so it cultivates a positive attitude towards all the husbands, which is a good thing.
And how about just steps in? I mean, I appreciate that. But, Bill, to speak to the steps within the context of marriage, turning towards each other, cultivating friendship there.
So I would say the place to start is to begin playing together once again. That so often marriage just becomes about work. And the average adult in North America doubles his or her responsibility level every 10 years. And so over the years, responsibility just builds up and builds up and builds up, and we quit playing together. And so that's where I would say you should start. And don't limit the possibilities. Just go try stuff and see if it works for you. It could be active kind of things. Like I know guys who are my age who they won't announce it publicly, but they tell me that, you know what, going and getting pedicures with my wife is actually a really cool thing.
You might have to do it, like, on a time when no men that they know, you know, to see them walk in the mall.
Right.
But
if they go and they laugh together, and then later on they laugh about all the things that happened while they were doing it. And they're playing together in a way that their, you know, manly man friends wouldn't encourage them to do, but they're developing a great friendship. And we know another lady who her husband just loves fishing, doesn't just like fishing, loves fishing. And she just finally decided, you know, I'm going to go try it. I've never thought about going fishing. I don't even think I would like it, but I'm just going to go try it. And it turns out she's learned to love it too. And they have all these great memories that they're building now because they're out fishing doing something she didn't think was a possibility.
You know what? I just am so excited because sometimes it's the littlest things. It's that asking the question. It's the sitting across from your spouse, not looking at your phone, but looking in their eyes and actually listening to what they have to say. Bill has created really fun app that I'm even getting the benefits of.
For any guys out there that are wondering, gosh, this is such a mystery. What do I do? There is an app now called Her Best Friend that you can get on either of the app stores, and it will give you one idea a day on how to make this thing happen.
Wow.
If you can't do anything else, you can just follow the app and try the ideas you like. The ideas you don't like, just leave them alone. There's more coming tomorrow. But it gives you an opportunity to build an ongoing friendship with your wife after you've run out of your own ideas.
And you know it's a good tool, because that's really what you want. You want as many tools in your toolbox as you can to build that friendship. And I was excited for this app because we have been struggling because men just are not usually book buyers, but we know they need to be friends with their wife. And so I kept telling women, Bill's working on an app for that. And to have your daughter-in-laws, like our boys are really romantic by nature, but even my daughter-in-laws are calling, thanks, you're the best father-in-law ever. I'm loving the results of this app. Because it's the little things. It's the opening of the door. It's the bringing the flower. It's the asking the question. It's the how is your day. It's the getting up and greeting your spouse. I mean, we should be more excited when our spouse comes home than the puppy. All right, bottom line stuff oftentimes makes that friendship.
And the other two things I would say, Susie, is if you pray together, it's amazing how the friendship develops if you don't put too much pressure on it. Like if you don't evaluate each other's prayers after you're done. And the third thing is, you know, John Gottman up at the University of Washington has shown that the secret of long-term marriage success is the friendship between a husband and a wife. And what that means is you know each other's fears, you know each other's joys, you have a feel for what's important to the other person. And the only way you develop that is by taking time to talk to one another. And that's why in the app I put a bunch of questions you can ask your wife so you can get to know what's important to her. And as you hear what's important to her or what's important to him, it creates a natural tie between you as friends that you can then build on going forward.
So here's some pieces of advice. Date to your wife. Plan a play date. Do something that's out of your comfort zone. Schedule it. Dream together. Picture ideas that you can enter into the interests of the others, and then try something new all together. Find some new common interests. Stay curious about each other. So much you can do to cultivate a friendship, and it's really exciting when you turn into this, when you turn to this idea that it's possible to have an intimate friendship with your spouse. Talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today as we wrap up. Pam, wondering if you would pray for that couple for whom this is maybe new news or old news. It's just something they've not tended to, and realizing as they're hearing you today that it's something they need to do. Would you pray?
Lord, you know how to be friends. You created us to be your friend. And so we do pray for that couple that feels like they're running on parallel tracks or their lives are going in different directions. And we pray that you would just bond them together, that you would show them that one positive thing to say or do each day to draw nearer to their spouse and become their spouse's best friend. Give them the idea to be creative. Lord, in a way that their hearts are knitted together no matter what storm of life is sent their way. In Jesus' name, thanks for being our friend. Amen.
Amen. Bill and Pam, thank you so much for all you do for marriage and for the family. Good to talk with you today.
God bless you, Susie.
God bless you as well. Let's listen into a song. Song, great reminder, press on. Even during those seasons of life in a marriage when you feel bored, you know what? Make some choices, make some time to have fun. Invest in your marriage. It's totally worth it. Well, this is hour two. Coming up, hour two, I'm sorry, we'll be talking to Dr. Greg Smalley about the amygdala hijack, and then Dr. Gary Chapman about anger. Hour two is up next.